Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. Gross domestic product, or GDP, is the one statistic that just about everyone knows is used to measure economic growth. But in this program, economist Diane Coyle says GDP may increasingly be a poor measure of prosperity.
I think the issue for GDP comes if the pace of innovation is changing as much as it seems to be at the moment. And so that gap between what we're measuring and the welfare effect seems to be quite large.
With all the technological advances in recent years, one would expect that economies have become more productive. But when measured in GDP, the numbers show the opposite is true. Diane Coyle refers to this phenomenon as the productivity puzzle and suggests the mismeasurement of digital activities within the economy has a lot to do with it. Coyle is professor of economics at the University of Manchester and was invited to speak at the IMF's fifth statistical forum on measuring the digital economy.
So the productivity puzzle, why is it such a puzzle? And do you believe that productivity is actually higher or lower than GDP implies?
The puzzle consists in the fact that in most of the OECD member countries, the growth rate of productivity has slowed down significantly or stopped since around the financial crisis. And the puzzle is that economists can't completely explain why. There are some good reasons, like the effect of the crisis itself, aging populations. But one of the questions is whether part of it is due to mismeasurement of GDP, which affects those calculations. And that's what a lot of people are now looking at, because in the digital sector, or just from casual observation, you can see that the pace of technological change has been, if anything, increasing. It's very rapid. It's transforming our lives. We're worried about autonomous vehicles destroying jobs and so on. How can it be that this is not showing up at all in the productivity figures? Answering the second part of your question about whether or not it's higher or lower, I think it's very hard to say, because working through the complexities of what's happening with digital to get a final number at the end, it's just a process that we economists and statisticians are only partway through. So, for example, we don't have any good idea about how this is affecting the growth of GDP between different countries, because so many companies now use the digital technologies to arrange their affairs between different countries, and that leads to new kinds of artifacts that we've not got any good statistics on. We don't have a definitive idea about how to collect prices and adjust the price indices that we feed into GDP to get real terms output to take account of all the digital things that are going on. So my own working hypothesis is that there are lots of small effects that add up to something that's quite large, and it would make quite a big difference to GDP and productivity, but that's still to be tested.
So the thing about GDP that strikes me is that, you know, what everybody has accepted is that it doesn't, or it's not supposed to, measure welfare. So why is it that up until very recently, we've not seemed to be very interested in measuring welfare? I mean, why today is welfare something that we need to incorporate, or people think that we need to incorporate in the way that we measure the economy?
National accountants very often say that GDP isn't a measure of economic welfare, it's just a measure of economic activity. And they are making quite a sharp distinction at the moment between the GDP statistics and productivity measurement and whether or not that's in trouble, and the obvious consumer welfare that you can see, and business welfare, you know, business changes that you can see from the digital technologies. I don't myself believe that's a valid distinction. It's partly because when we talk about GDP, everybody's using it as a shorthand for welfare. So if it's becoming a less good indicator, then that really matters. But it's also because when you start looking into the difference between the bit that's nominal and due to general inflation and the bit that's real and you're deflating with a price index, then actually you're getting into territory about economic welfare, because that's what knowing about real GDP growth over time is all about. It's, are we better off than we used to be? Is this measuring progress? And so I think this debate has opened up some difficult and quite long-standing questions about the effectiveness of our current framework for measuring economic welfare.
And so how important is household income in terms of measuring welfare And if it could help us measure welfare, why aren't we putting more resources towards gathering household income data?
We have this convention that although households do productive things themselves, they're not part of GDP, they're not part of the production marketed sector. Actually, there are good statistics on household incomes, on monetary incomes, and even some on stocks of wealth. But we don't collect a lot of information about how much time consumers spend doing things in the home that have value, that they can either do themselves or they can buy in the market. This home production, as it's called, home production of services, doesn't count towards GDP. Feminist economists have for a long time said it really ought to. And whether or not you think it should, it's also the case that there's substitution across that boundary. You can either do your washing yourself or take it out to the cleaners. You can either grow your own vegetables and cook them yourself, or you can buy pre-prepared meals from the supermarket. And over time, since the 1940s and 50s, that has gone the way of increasing GDP because women have more and more been going out to work. The digital technologies are blurring that boundary, and some of the movement is now going back the other way. There are things that we used to buy as marketed services that we can now do for ourselves at home using our home computer and broadband, like booking holidays or doing financial transactions and so on. And people are also creating all kinds of valuable goods and services for free and putting them on the internet, open source software, contributing to Wikipedia, putting entertaining videos out there. And that too is competing in some cases with marketed goods. And then there's a whole so-called sharing economy phenomenon where people are using their own car or their spare room to earn some income, or they are using a digital platform to find work. And all of these things are really blurring that traditional boundary.
Hmm. And you mentioned in the paper I've read recently that we've not done a very good job at measuring innovation, any innovation. Why? What is it about innovation that makes it so difficult to measure?
This has always been really hard, and GDP has never captured well the effects of a substantial new innovation. Often people talk about this in the context of innovative new goods. And the sooner you can get those goods into a price index, the better account you're able to take of the change that they're making to real GDP and consumer welfare. But sometimes those changes are just very big. The historian David Landes has a lovely example in his book about Nathan Mayer Rothschild, richest man in the world at the time, who died of an infected abscess on his tooth. He could have today bought an antibiotic and fixed it very quickly. What would he have paid out of his fortune for that at the time, the mid-19th century? And the answer is, that's not really a sensible question, is it? It's just such a transformative innovation. I think the issue for GDP comes if the pace of innovation is changing or the scope of them is changing as much as it seems to be at the moment. And so that gap between what we're measuring and the welfare effect seems to be quite large.
And so what about data? I mean, how good are we now at collecting the data that we actually need? I mean, is the whole push on big data, it seems to be like we might be losing an opportunity to be gathering good data while we're all scrambling to get this data that companies are using to adapt their products to.
I think it's an opportunity that all the statistical agencies would love to take advantage of. And in the UK, the Office for National Statistics has set up its own data science campus to try to use some of these new techniques and data sources. It's often written about, it's quite hard to do in practice. Part of the problem is that the companies derive commercial value from it, so they're very cautious about handing out their data to the extent of being quite reluctant participants in some cases. There are also just big problems in cleaning the data sets, getting it in a format that can be used, understanding what techniques you need to be able to use it for official statistics.
Do you think that companies that are most interested in big data understand it enough? Do they have the means to contextualize it? And do they perhaps marginalize the traditional institutions that have come up with the data sets that we've been using for decades now?
The companies that do the big data and collect it and manipulate it themselves for their own products I think probably they're full of really clever folks and the techniques they use are amazing. I think they probably don't appreciate the extent to which they themselves rely on official statistics. If you're looking at the data that you're gathering from your consumers, you're going to be using official statistics from the census or from other sources to tell you how they compare to the broader population and therefore what weight you should be putting on it, and that affects the commercial uses that you can make of your data. I think they underappreciate that, and they themselves ought to be a willing part of the official statistical community and be delivering themselves for the official statistics. It's just actually part of the social contract that if you are a successful company taking advantage of the legal system and the infrastructure and all the public facilities in a country, then it's just part of the deal that you cooperate with the statistical agencies, because the purpose of official statistics is to enable governments to run their economies and their countries for the best, and that has to be the deal.
Yeah, and in terms of official statistics, you know, this statistical forum here, Do you think it's encouraging to have been invited to speak at a forum like this? I mean, do you think that statisticians are now coming to terms with the fact that they need to sort of change their approach? Or do you think that there's a change of attitude?
I think statisticians here and in the official agencies around the world are as aware as everybody else that the economy is being transformed by these technologies, and we need to understand what's going on. So I think they're actually very open-minded about it. One of the striking things about this forum is how many people have come along. And there's a community of researchers who are working on this and official statisticians. I think it's very encouraging to see the policymaker interest as well, and the wider interest in understanding what the statistics are telling us and what they need to be telling us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Diane Coyle, professor of economics at the University of Manchester. Coyle is also the author of several books, including GDP, A Brief but Affectionate History. And her most recent research paper is entitled Do-It-Yourself Digital, The Production Boundary, The Productivity Puzzle, and Economic Welfare. You can watch the webcast of the IMF's Fifth Statistical Forum at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcast. And you can also now follow us on Twitter at IMF Podcast.